Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Judy Joy Jones Show. I'm going to get started right away with tonight's show. We have a very, very special guest, and I want to make the most of every minute with her. She was gracious enough to share her time with us, and I'm going to let her have the show, and I will introduce her. First, I'm going to bring up my very special co-host who works for Blog Talk Radio herself. Her name is Christina Blodgett. Hello, Christina.
Hi, Joy. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine. And how are you?
Oh, I'm well. Thank you.
Wow. So you're kind of in a part of the world where it might be a little colder. I'm in San Francisco, and we're actually almost in shorts out there.
Well, to put it in perspective, I'm wearing a scarf, and I'm inside, so it's a little chilly on the East Coast. I'm right outside New York City. I'm in Connecticut, so.
In Connecticut. Okay, well, yep. You and May are, May Pang, our guest tonight. Y'all are almost neighbors, because I think she might be in New York City or are from there, so you kind of know what it's like. You know, I'd like to go ahead and tell you a little bit about her, Christina. But I wanted to ask you very quickly, are you ready for Christmas? Have you done your shopping?
Well, if we're being totally honest, I still haven't done spring cleaning.
Oh, no. I shouldn't have asked. I knew it.
I know. Maybe we need to edit that part out.
We can work on it after the show's over. Sorry about that. But, Well, I appreciate you being here so much, Christina, and helping us tonight. And I wanted to kind of start off by asking everyone if they'd ever heard of a planet, another planet called Maypeng. Now, perhaps you haven't, but one day in time, my intuition says you may well be flying to in a rocket ship. You bought a ticket. You're going to go to the Maypeng planet, which is right next to, in the galaxy out there, the Beatles planet. Maypeng, actually, our special guest tonight, she has lived a life that few of us can even dream about. And May has made her mark in time, and she did that when she was in her early 20s. So, you know, we better all get busy. But actually, Maypeng, if you mention the name of the Beatles, and you will be hard-pressed to find anyone on the earth who doesn't know about the famous singing group. People all over the world are singing their songs or humming them or listening to them on the radio or on their CDs. There's just no corner of this globe that is not involved or influenced by the Beatles. I know people, and I'm sure there's millions that I don't know, that actually name their children after the Beatles. Well, our guest tonight, Maypeng, was very, very young, and she was the Beatles' John Lennon and his wife, Yoko Ono. She was their personal assistant in the early 1970s. Again, she was in her early 20s when most of us are still kind of scratching our head, like, what are we going to do? Well, May was working for the Beatles' management company. She was hired by them, and then she was hired by, from that management company, John Lennon and Yoko Ono. But I just want to let you know, this didn't turn out to be your usual office assistant job. There were some extracurricular activities on the side, and because of that, she's our special guest tonight with the book that she wrote about that, and showed the photographs she took. I'm certain she typed and she filed and she booked appointments for Yoko and John. But one day, Yoko called Maypeng into her office, and she asked her to do some things. She thought it might be a good idea if she and John Lennon became lovers, and which is a little bit beyond what your normal jobs are for being a personal assistant. But you know, when you have a genius like Yoko Ono and John Lennon, things are not going to be just like we know them. They're going to be a little different. And from 1973 to 1975, John Lennon and Maypeng became lovers on the advice and with the approval of Yoko Ono. And I'm sure if I have any of this, I'm not telling you properly, that May will be happy to clear it all up. But legend has it that John Lennon was unhappy and unproductive. He was estranged from his family during this time and from his bandmates. But if you look at Maypeng's book, which I hope you do, I hope you go to her website and buy that book. And by the way, you can find her book and you can find anything about May, actually. I have got it quite condensed in our tonight's program right there on the description page. But if you go to www.instamatickarma.com and you buy her book, you're going to see in her photos, she tells a different story. We don't see the John Lennon that was unhappy, unproductive, and all that. No, instead, May took some photos while she lived with John, and they are very, very sensitive. They're beautiful, and they're the type of photos that you and I might take of our family. You know, we'd pull out our Polaroid, because back then that's what we used, our Instamatic, and just kind of click. And then we'd take them and toss them in a box, put them in our closet, which is exactly what she did, not realizing that one day she was going to write this book. And I am so glad she did, because the book is beautiful. Again, it's called Instamatic Karma, Photographs of John Lennon by Maypeng. And I tried to actually, get a copy. I'd seen a copy of it. I wanted a copy of my own, and it was sold out. So I want to tell you, it's a very popular book. But the photos, the ones that I looked at, show that John was clowning around. And also, he was more than productive. He was working on his hit album, Walls and Bridges, and they were kind of hanging out together in their Manhattan apartment. And in May's own words, I'm going to read you her words, and then I'm going to bring her on board, let her talk to her, and her own, as she's live on the phone. But she said, Miss Pang said, there were times I was a bit reticent in taking out my camera. Like when some old friends stopped by to hang out, I didn't want to intrude on those moments, but John insisted. He felt that I captured him in ways that no one else did. And for years, my closest friends didn't get to see those photos because I kept them tucked away in a shoebox in my closet. And there is one photo in there that struck me as really being beautiful. It's the historically important photo of John Lennon signing the ending of the Beatles. So she has some beautifully sensitive, just everyday photos that you would take of anyone that you love and are living with. But she also has some historic photos as well. And you know, folks, you and I may never have the opportunity to be part of a group like the Beatles that have really changed the course of our lives, but we are going to be part of a woman who has chosen to give us some of her time tonight, and I'm going to bring her up right now. Her name is May Pang, and hopefully we can all live through some of her words that she shared with John Lennon. Hello, May? Whoops. I'm sorry. Hello, May.
Can you hear me?
I can. How are you tonight?
I'm fine. And yes, I am cold. I'm on the East Coast, and I'm freezing as well.
You and my co-host. Here
and
I am.
And I am jealous that I can't be in the warmer weather.
Oh, I wish you were all here. You could stay in my apartment here in San Francisco.
It is one of my favorite cities, and John and I had a great time when we were there.
Did you?
Yeah, we spent a weekend up there once, and we were on K-San with Tom Donahue, and then we went sailing, which John loved being by the water, and we went around the bay, went around Alcatraz Island, and we had a great time.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. He would have been really, really popular here. Did he perform here?
As a solo, no. Not as a soloist, no. No, obviously with the group, but not as a soloist. I don't remember him being in San Francisco, no.
Yeah, because I don't think I've heard too much about that, and I've heard about a lot of, you know, Janis Joplin and all those kind of people, but I didn't really hear about John Lennon being over here, but obviously, you know, I was trying to find your book tonight because I was going to buy it. I had looked through it, but I hadn't been able. And, you know, everybody, they're out of it. And I think.
Well, I'm happy to hear about that.
Really? I was like, what do you mean? You don't have. And they said, well, we know the book. And I said, well, let's get it in the store, you know. Do you know the Castro area? In San Francisco?
Castro area. Where is that?
Okay. Well, it's the most famous gay area in the United States. It's like the icon. It's like everybody comes here to come to. Well, I live on the edge of it. I don't live in the Castro, but that's where I was shopping. And the guys, you know, they were going, oh, dear, we better get that book. And I said, yeah, you better get that book. So I think actually my co-host, Christina, you had the same problem, didn't you?
I did. I had a hard time finding it, but I was able to find it, and I got it today, and it's just so beautifully done. It was just amazing to see these photographs and to read your words and to glimpse this period of your life and about life and lives that connected to so many of us, whether, you know, most of us did not know John personally, but these pictures give us a perspective, an insight, a window into that part of his life, and thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Oh, I'm just glad that you liked it, because, you know, when I looked in my camera, and then I have to explain to everyone, even though the title's called Instamatic Karma, I did take the photos with my Nikon. I had a little Nikon camera at a 35, and John had the Polaroid. We also had the Polaroid, as you can see on the cover, the SX70, and he loved that. He liked the instant, you know, that he can get the picture.
Oh.
And I'm sure he would love that now with all the new digital. He would be even more thrilled. You know, I took it with my Nikon, and I saw John, and how you see him in the book is how I saw him. So you really, as you're seeing him, you're really seeing him through my eyes, the way I viewed him.
Wow. Well, we get that intimate glance, and I found him extremely sensitive and extremely unplanned. Like, you didn't set those up, did you, May?
Oh, are you kidding
John?
Me? Yes. I don't think John would like the idea that as he's blowing his nose in one picture that,
yeah, right,
that he would want that.
Or eating soup, yeah.
Yeah. Hold it, John.
Yeah, I think, or laying in bed, or, you know, just
I
with,
know.
The cats, with the cats around him.
Yeah. So that, and that's what's so delightful about it, because you were able to... Now, I did also try to find your first book. I couldn't find it.
So that's a definite out of print. It's out of print.
It's gone. Okay.
Yes, and I am definitely, my next project is to redo that book with a lot of stories that never made it.
Okay.
You know, and a little more insight into the man, you know.
Okay, because I couldn't figure out, because I kept looking, because I thought, well, the photos, but if I could read a bit more... I wanted to ask you also, because I live in San Francisco, as you know, and I was looking around, and I thought, now I wonder, because we have some really kind of famous galleries, and one of them is particularly of art, you know, like of photos and stuff of rock stars. And now, do you have any traveling photo shows or anything around the world?
I've done a couple.
Okay.
And I've done a couple. I've been doing it with Nancy Andrews, who also has a book out called A Dose of Rock and Roll. And John and I introduced Nancy years ago to Ringo.
Oh.
And she was with him for about 6 years. So the two of us, and she's a photographer in her own right, and she and I have done a couple of shows on the road, at galleries out in Arizona and in New York and, you know, in places like that. And it's been good. I show... Nine photos, and obviously nine is being a number that John always liked, and to him it was a magical number. And so, in keeping with it, I only exhibit nine. I've been exhibiting only nine photos, and then on my website you can see the nine photos that I have limited prints. You know,
okay,
They're of limited prints of 50, and people, you know, if anybody's interested, they can contact me. And, and that's what I've been doing. And next year sometime I'll do another nine photographs, and, you know, there'll be just nine.
Why did he like nine? That, I'm just curious.
Well, he was born, everything he had done, somehow the number kept coming up nine.
Oh, okay.
So he realized that was his magical number.
Huh.
You know, he was born on the 9th, you know, of October.
Oh,
and
right.
He was, you know, at one point he said, oh, yeah, my Aunt Mimi had nine cats. Everything was
nine.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, that's great. Because I was looking at, I think it was the Ronnie Woods Gallery. Is he the bass player or was for the Rolling Stones?
No, Ronnie Wood is the guitar player.
Oh, guitar player. Okay.
Right, in the Stones, right.
And he does art that's kind of exhibited in different galleries. And I thought, dang, you know, if I could just get up close to one of May's photos, you know, here in San Fran, I would love that because, you know, I could buy a print.
Right, because I haven't done that one yet. I did show a couple of prints a couple of years ago, and then, you know, but they weren't really shown. Now I do.
Okay.
Now, you know, I haven't been asked to come out to San Francisco, maybe, you know.
Maybe we'll do that. Yeah, let's see if we can get that going. Cause,
right. Yeah. You know, you would see, because Nancy and I did a great one in New York where she exhibited 15, and she had a beautiful one of Ringo as a pope. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we had a couple of big ones. I turned around and I did two giant ones, and they were like 30 by 40. And one of them in the book, one of them is black and white, and the other one was, you know, him sticking his tongue at you, and it was very interesting. And you know, when you're up close in the one black and white, and when you look closely into his sunglasses, you actually see me taking the photo of him.
How cool is that? So you can see that when you're right up next to it.
Right.
Oh wow, isn't that amazing? So you can see him taking the photo. God, I would love to have that. I would love to have a copy of that. Because, you know, there's just so much of that you can't get that intimate feeling unless you're standing in a gallery and you're looking right at it, right?
I know. Well, Christina, I think since you have the book, and have you thumbed through it all?
Yes, I have.
Okay. And the picture that I'm talking about, so that Christina has a place to figure it out, it's a black and white photo of John, and it's in we were out in Palm Springs, and he's looking through his legs, and he's just sitting down, and he's looking through his legs, and I just, you know, and I just took the picture of him that way.
Yeah, well, you know, actually, Christina was, you know, wondering about the title of the book. What was that that you asked me?
Well, you know, I was wondering if it was a variation of instant karma, you know, what led you to call it systematic karma?
Well, you know, looking for a title for a book is always difficult. And we were looking for play on words, which was always John's thing. And what better way than to play it on this one, especially when we were looking at the camera, and it was instant. And then we went into, like, from there, you know, the progression went into Instamatic. And then, but even though it wasn't an Instamatic, it fit because it was Instamatic Karma. And it was just that play on words.
Oh,
okay. It was really on the play on the instant karma.
Instant karma. And I was actually curious, when you were a young girl, like you were a little girl, did you have a dream that you were going to be doing this? Did you see yourself?
Well, that's an interesting question, because when I was younger, like everybody else, I was bitten by the beetle bug, and you know, and you see them on television.
Sure.
But you know, I grew up in a very very strict home. You know, it's very Chinese, and I wasn't going anywhere. But American Bandstand and you know, Dick Clark and all that, all that music, that saved me in the day. And I said, oh, I wish, you know, it's like everybody else. I wish I worked for them. You know, it's all that dreaming. It just fell into my lap in that sense.
Okay.
And I was thrilled. I mean, how you dream about it, but to actually have it happen is another story.
Absolutely. You got the job at the Beatles management company, but now you compose your own music, or do you just sing, or what is your relation? Now, I know you've been on some of the albums.
Yeah, I sang on some of the albums, but what happened was, in the Beatles management, I mean, you know, I came out of school, and I wanted to just work. I had no real formal training in typing or anything, because I did academic courses, not secretarial or anything, so I didn't know what to do, and it just happened. I was in the building where the management company was at, and I went to for an interview for another company in the same building, and my girlfriend said, "Do you know what's in this building?" I mean, she just happened to mention it to me, and I said, "What?" She says, "Apple Records." Now, it's amazing because she mentioned that to me. I mean, I wouldn't have even have thought about looking at the directory, and I turned around and I said, well, you know what? I'm just going to go up and ask them for a job.
Oh.
And what could they say to me? If they said no, I was right back where I started from. It wasn't going to be any, you know, worse off than I was. And I guess it was a guardian angel, because I thought, well, they should be back from lunch now. You know, I'm thinking in a 9-to-5 thing. And I got up there at about 1 o'clock, and I saw this woman. I said, do the Beatles ever get here, you know, come out? And they says, no. And she just sort of chuckled. And I said, okay. And then I said, you know, I was just seeing if there was a job. And she says, well, I don't know of any. And just at that moment, as I'm waiting for the elevator, the doors open and all these men were walking out. And she just turned around and just happened to yell out and say, this girl's looking for a job. Do we have anything for her? Oh. And this guy said, yeah, why don't you come back after lunch?
Oh, my God.
And that's all I needed to hear. And I'm thinking, oh, my God. You know, and basically I came back after lunch and they said, can you type? And I said, sure, which of course I barely could do that. Oh, could you do this? Oh, yeah, sure. And I kept doing it. And then finally they said, well, you're hired. Come back on Monday.
Wow.
And it turns out, and it definitely turned out that the woman behind the receptionist desk was someone who actually worked inside in music publishing, which was something I loved. I mean, you know, that became one of my favorite departments is working in music publishing. So,
you were just this young girl. You were like 21, right?
Oh no, at that time I was only 18.
18. Gosh, mate.
I was about to turn 19, yeah.
Oh, my God. So how old were you when you met John and Yoko, or when you went to work for them, when they
Well,
asked?
I did my first project with them when I first met them. I was just 20.
20 years old. And then they asked, would you be our personal assistant?
They kept calling me. They would come into New York. They would do projects, and they would call
me.
Because I got chosen as one. There was a couple of us. But I kept getting chosen to be the one for certain things. I was the point person. And they kept coming back. And then like two or three of us were all working for them because the projects were just it couldn't be done by one. It had to be done by a bunch of us. So.
Sure, sure.
But for some reason, I guess I was the one that they kept calling on more. And in the end, they said, we just want you full time.
Full time, and you had no idea what was in store for you. You went
in. You know, little would I have known what would be in store for me, because I'd been working for them by that point for 3 years. So it wasn't as if it wasn't something that happened like a couple of months later.
No.
I had been with them for over 3 years by that, you know. So it's kind of a little shock for me, you know.
Yeah, and so Yoko calls you into the office, and what happens?
Well, you know, it's 9:30 in the morning. I always used to get in early because we were at the Dakota. I moved them in.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, I always try to get in because I need that little break time to get my head together and get my first cup of coffee.
Sure.
And she came in and she just said to me, I got to talk to you. And I thought, oh, she's got another project on top of the other 20
right.
I have already. So I said, okay. And I was ready. I had my pen, my pad. I'm ready to write. And she says, well, you know, John and I are not getting along. And I said, of course. I said, I'm sorry. And, you know, if you work around them, there were like three of us at that point working around. You just know. You just sort of, you don't say anything, but you know. And I said, I'm sorry to hear that. She goes, yes, John's going to probably start seeing other people and, you know, he's going to start dating. And as she's saying this to me, I'm thinking, oh, God, more people in the mix. Because that's how you look at it. I thought, oh my God, it's
more work.
It's, you know, now we have exactly. With more work, and I'm thinking, oh God, John, Yoko, and an X Factor, and then all of a sudden, as she's talking, and I'm in this other world in my head. She says, well, you know what? You don't have a boyfriend. I think it'd be good if John should ask you out because I know he likes you. And I went, what? And I just sort of looked at her and I said, I don't want your husband. And she says, oh, no, I know you don't, but
right.
I think you would treat him very nicely, and I think you should go out with him because I know he likes you, and you should do that. I said, I don't want to. And she kept saying, well, you don't want him to go out with somebody not nice. And I said, of course not, but I don't think I'm the one.
Right.
And this kept going on, and then finally she says, no, I think you should, and she got up and she left my office.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, I just hope this is a bad dream. Because it was not something I was, envisioning in my life. I was very happy at the work factor, and so it really sort of threw me. And and I kept throwing this, and I kept not wanting to deal with it, and not trying to walk away from it, and found out later John was just nervous, and we were all just tiptoeing. And it was only later, when John was pursuing me himself, that I did give into to a little bit of what's going on. I was not willing to do that. See, that's part of the myth. Everybody thought Yoko said and I went. That didn't happen that way.
Didn't happen like that.
No,
okay.
It actually did. John did pursue me because I did not want to be part of that scene. And in the end, when we went to California, it was because.
Mm-hmm.
John's lawyer, nobody knew what was going on, and John's lawyer was over the house, and Yoko was out of town on one of her conferences, and John turned around and looked at him, and he said, so when are you going back to L.A.? Because his lawyer was from L.A.
Mm-hmm.
He said, tonight. And he just said, oh, good. Well, May and I are going to be on that plane with you.
Oh, my God.
And so we just left with him, and then we stayed at his lawyer's home.
Well, were you paid overtime?
I wish not. I was not paid. So that was, everybody thought that I was paid. That's another thing. That's another myth.
You were not paid,
me. No.
Oh, my God.
I was not a paid person. No.
Mm. So how did you exist? Well, I guess John had money, so that was.
Well, no. What actually happened was we were, the money that he would get, and this is, he was in, because he was trying to stay in America, and we were also in the lawsuit, there was a receivership out of England, and the money was given as an allowance. So all four guys were given an allowance, and we didn't have enough. And his lawyer made a deal with the record company to have some money advanced, and we were advanced some money to survive for a while.
Well, sure. You got to pay your food.
We had to pay our bills and everything else. So that's exactly what happened. So we really, in those days, the Beatles were really more paper rich and cash poor.
Not good.
No, it wasn't. And it's only in these last years, in more recent times, that the Beatles, especially, have gotten their share. A lot of the groups after them. Have learned from their mistakes, so they made more money.
They got the money. They weren't. Well, that is like, we look back and we learn, but the amazing thing is that John Lennon kind of, Christina was talking to me. She was wondering what was it, Christina, about his charisma? What made him?
Exactly. I was just wondering through your eyes, what made him such a magnetic spirit that you feel like people were so drawn to? What do you think it was?
He had, talk about charisma. He had a way about him, just the way he spoke to people, just the way his thought process, was going when, you meet him. It's very hard to say what it is specifically, but if you meet someone that has, it's like if you met John F. Kennedy or any of these people that had some charisma, you just know that they have this thing. When they speak to you, it's talking to you, and there's a pull, there's an action. You just look at, he looked straight into your eyes, and you were a puddle on the floor. I mean, he just knew how to get your attention and talk to you. And he was very commanding in the way his presence,
That's right. I guess Yoko had that as well. I mean, she doesn't mess around with what she. Now, are you friends with her today? You're not.
No,
right?
I'm not friendly with her. I'm
okay.
Very close to Cynthia and Julian.
And Julian. Oh, Julian. Yeah, I was looking at his MySpace. The guy's a really brilliant musician.
He's wonderful. He has a new album coming out soon. It's all finished and everything. They're getting ready.
Wow.
It's been a long time. He's him and his dad. I mean, he's you know, he's an image, he's a spinning image of his dad, and it's and the two, to watch the two of them, and they hadn't seen each other when I was with John. It was the
right.
Know, it was a wonderful time for the two of them to get together. And
you were the one that brought them back together, weren't you?
Yeah, they hadn't seen each other in about 4 years, so it was nice to for them
wow.
to be together.
Isn't
I just
it?
Believed, you know, I just believed in the fact that John needed to be with family members, and I mean, family doesn't have to be blood, and I think the other family
yeah.
members were, of course, his brothers, and we got a chance to see a lot of, you know, of Ringo, and we saw a lot of Paul. Contrary to the beliefs out there. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
we saw George when he came through on his Dark Horse tour.
Huh.
So we saw a lot of people. And, you know, John was the most accessible at that time when we were together, as well as his most productive creatively, musically.
Yeah.
And just everything. And, you know, the beliefs, of course, you know, that he was drunk down and out and everything, and it wasn't anything like that.
Well, I did read that you were the mother superior. Now, was that a fallacy, maybe?
Well, the mother superior was the fact that I tried to keep everybody as much in line when it came to the recording session, and it was kind of tough. In that case, it was for the rock and roll album, and the first half of the rock and roll album was produced by Phil Spector, and that was a nightmare.
Oh, okay.
Because working with Phil was not easy.
Not
easy. No, John and I just said we couldn't work in New York, in L.A., and
oh.
we couldn't wait to get back. And that's why half the album was produced by John. He came back and he finished it, and it was great. And, you know, just holding it together was what it was all about.
What you were about. And, you know, the thing is there's got to be that one person that kind of stands out and, you know, is the mother superior, and that's why I thought, you know, Christina and I were talking early this morning, and I'll just share with you a little bit that, you know, we were talking about the fact that Christina was wondering, like, you had been behind the scenes, like, now how many years? And all of a sudden you're brought out in the public, and we're talking to you about you. And Christina, what was it you were kind of putting together there that, like, is it hard for her to, you know, step out like this and give
right.
up? The,
you know, was it? That's exactly right. You know, was it a hard decision made to bring, you know, to come back more into the public spotlight to share these photos knowing that you would be asked questions? Or was it just part of your journey?
I think in this case it was part of my journey.
Mm-hmm.
I knew, I mean, having been exposed to it a bit when I was with John, that, you know, it went into a graduate. It's always different. And I didn't know what to expect this time around, since I'd been more of, you know, raising my two kids over these last 20-odd years, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was quite different. So coming out and doing this, the journey has been great because I got a chance to reconnect with a lot of people out there that I hadn't seen in a long time, that were part of my journey back then with John. And it's been great because it gives me my base. It's back to where we were, and we just have great conversations. We have a great remembrance. And like I said, it's a good time. And I think I wanted to bring John out to everyone because
yeah.
I wanted to share. That's why this book is also dedicated to everyone who loved John. And
I love that.
Not,
yeah.
Right? Because it wasn't
yeah.
just about me. I love him from a different point of view, but I
right.
know how many other people loved him, and I wanted
oh.
that to be acknowledged by other people, you know, that I recognize that as well, that, you know, that everybody loved this man. And it was terrible that to know that he's not around us anymore to give us some good music, some good stuff, that, you know, his artwork, his saying,
yeah.
his whatever. He was this is the whole thing, and I'm glad that I'm also able to share it to some of the people that I've met along the road, to tell them, a lot of recording artists, where I would go up to them and I say, you know, John was a fan of your music, and
mm-hmm.
I would tell them, and they would go, John Lennon knew my music? And I said, of course. And he said, well, what song did he like? And I would give them names, and they'd be like, oh, my God, they're so dumbfounded. Because they would, you know, they would never have thought about that.
Right,
you know, that
right.
They're singing. I'll give you a perfect example. It would be somebody like Carla Thomas. Remember, she wrote the Baby, right? And John was a B-side lover. You know, he loved all those B-sides.
Yeah.
And he would tell me, he goes, oh, this is a great song. The song goes, I can't take it, and all this stuff. And when I got a chance to meet Carla Thomas, I told him that John loved her, you know, her music. And she was very, very surprised.
Very excited. Because that's what I was just, you know, like, you're carrying on. There's, you know, we don't understand that. The comprehension of the people that love the Beatles is beyond our earthly, I think, understanding, but it is huge. And, you know, you're able to reach out to all of us and share a little bit of an intimate side that we will never have, but yet it kind of refreshes our memory of this person that we love so deeply. Would you mind if I play one of his songs, Come Together?
Oh, go right ahead.
And we'll just take a little breathing break, and then we'll come right back. I won't play the whole song, but because we're running out.
Joy is coming right back on now. I think she should. I was dancing
May?
In my chair.
Yeah.
I don't think you know. I don't know what happened. Yeah, because
I was busy dancing, Joy.
Well, I will say that was the song that started it all for us.
Oh,
I Want to Hold Your Hand. Remember that was the first big hit here.
That was the first big hit. Well, maybe that's why it wouldn't let go. That's great. So you have a lot of good memories about that one. Well, you know that. You know, the thing about music is it goes beyond that left-brained, and we don't understand, but it just puts us into that zone where we remember. And you know, I think that the Beatles are instrumental in. I don't believe there is anyone on this earth that I've ever spoken to that doesn't have a favorite Beatles song. And I was perplexed. Why? You know, what was it that they were trying to share with the world? Were they ahead of their time? Or are we just now going to get it? Or what do you think, May?
I just think that they were able to give out a message. And they were able to say it in a way that that we couldn't do. They can mm-hmm. say. I mean, you know, there was plenty of things. I Want to Hold Your Hand. I mean, Who would have thought? Excuse me for a second while I cough.
Sure. Oh, no problem.
Well, all right. I'm back. No, I just think that they can actually say things that in so many different ways. You know, why my guitar gently weeps. They were sensitive. They were romantic. They were funny. They were just able to, you know. In My Life was one of my favorite songs. Help.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
Good Day Sunshine. Yeah. We Can Work It Out.
Uh-huh. Yep.
There were messages in everything, and they could say it better than we could.
They could
said it in music.
They could just put it into music, and you know, I really feel like you know, the questions that I have are so you know, like they seem insignificant to the bigger picture of the whole thing, and yet I know that sometimes we're asking questions that other people would like to know. One of them is about your children, your own children. Are they musically inclined? Are they into music? Or?
Both my kids are into music and art, and so they are very aware, because both my ex-husband is also a record producer, so they've been in this music stuff since they were born.
Okay.
And so they are very aware of it. My daughter is much more, she's the youngest, and she knows more about the music. I keep her, you know, tuned into the 60s, and she loves vocals, so she loves to listen to the 50s to hear the vocals of a lot of the old timers. You know, she loves the Everly Brothers and
Squires.
So she's in there, and yet at the same time she loves the new Asian pop singers. You know, and she knows everything about that. And my son is into all the techno stuff out there as well. So it's kind of an interesting mix that goes on around here.
Wow, because, you know, I know that you married again, and that's where you had your children, and that he was he a producer or director?
He was a record producer who produced people like David Bowie, Moody Blues.
Bowie, yeah.
Yes. So, you know, so the kids have been around music all their lives.
All their lives. And are you writing any music yourself?
No, I write poetry.
Poetry?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And, you know,
you know,
I totally, you know, I start writing and I do little bits here and there. In fact, a couple of people actually wanted to put my poetry to music because it somehow it was fitting, and I just haven't done that. But definitely.
Yeah, well, it takes time to get. What about, you know, I was wondering about John Lennon's first wife and what it would be like for Cynthia to have kind of taken the shadow place in the face of John and Yoko, because they just skyrocketed, you know, beyond our understanding. And, you know, how does she feel in all of this? Is she okay with it? She's got it together. And
She is very happy at the moment. She has she's married, and she's Noel, and they've been married for a few years now, and she's delightful. I mean, when my book was released a few months back, she came out for the release of the book and did some interviews with me, and she wanted to be sure that, you know, she wanted to show her support for this book.
That's great, because that's what I read, and I really felt like, for some reason, I know that, you know, even though maybe Yoko's not doing it, you know, publicly, but I'm sure she actually applauds it, because I think you're like ahead of your time, and you're very brave to just get this book out, because, you know, if I were you and I had gone through all of this, but, you know, on the other hand, you're like inside, so you don't realize your part. And when I said that about other planets, may I actually feel it, you know, that your role in history is already quite pronounced. You're ahead of your time, and I don't think that people that are ahead of their time have the easiest time. But I just want to applaud you for doing everything you did. You just kind of went along with the package and the picture, and because of that, we got a lot of new songs from John Lennon. You said that he wrote, didn't you, Christina, you were asking me about a song he wrote and dedicated to me?
That would be...
Oh, goodness. A paradox, I think that...
Yeah, it's called Surprise.
Right.
Yes, Surprise, Bird of Paradox.
And he wrote that when y'all were together, or were you, like, already...
We had just gotten together, and he just like wrote the song the next day. He said, "I've got something for you, and I want you to hear it." And I had no idea what it was, but he wanted me to hear something, and I thought, okay. And he sat me down, and he just picked up his acoustic guitar and he started to sing.
Wow, you know, I never. Well, you know, May, I've got to ask you, and you're free not to answer anything, but when he actually, after you and him, when he went back to Yoko, I guess she had a cure for his smoking or whatever reason he went back to her, was that heartbreaking for you?
Oh, absolutely. It was devastating. But I will say this, that in the 5 years that he was quiet, mm-hmm. We did see each other, and we did stay in touch.
You were still in touch with him up until the last...
He called me, and he called me from one of the last conversations we had. He called me from South Africa when he went down to Cape Town in 1980.
Because, you know, that, I mean, you were with him, and y'all were, you know, you had to be in love with him. And I think that... the highest form of love might be what you did, and that was letting go and let him go on to his destiny. And he had such a big one that you were asked to play a role. But did I read that you actually had a house together that y'all were getting ready?
We were about to buy a house, and we were about to go down to New Orleans to visit Paul and Linda, because John was contemplating at one point to like think, well, you know, maybe I'll start writing with Paul again.
Sure.
And this was a perfect time, and that's why I said he was thinking about even, you know, doing things with Paul.
So actually,
it came to an abrupt ending. Yes.
Yeah, abrupt ending.
Yes.
And you know, the way you have been able to put together this book and share with everyone, because so many people love him, and I think it's remarkable. I mean, I'm not so sure that in your shoes that I would have been able to carry forth like you have, and gone beyond my own personal this and that, but you have. And I know that a lot of people out there would have liked or would like to ask you questions. I think perhaps they're a little shy, May. It's almost like John Lennon and the Beatles are beyond, you know, it brings on that kind of intimidation. That's what I picked up. And so for that reason, I think that people might not, and I'm not able to bring up my chat board, unfortunately, but if I could, I'm sure there would be questions that people, you know, the average person would like to ask you, but they can find you if they go to, what is your website if you'd like to give that out?
They can write to me on, you know, at maypang.com. That's, you know, that's my own website.
All right.
I'm also on MySpace as well, so, you know, they can find me. And,
they can find you. And you're very, very open and accessible, which I found remarkable. And I also felt like, you know, this is part of a destiny that we all have, you know, the privilege of asking me a couple of questions. So, hey, everybody out there that was really too shy to call in, May is saying, go ahead and go ahead and write her, give her an email or a shout out, because she's accessible and she'd love to answer all those questions, because you knew John, and you know, everybody would love to know more about him. And I want to ask Christina, did you have some more questions that weren't brought up tonight? I'm sure you did.
Well, I do have a couple more. I just wanted to say one thing, May. I think the photo on page 77 in your book where the caption about the song he wrote you, I think that's one of my favorites. It's just, you said it was a few of your original test shots for the Walls and Bridges cover, and I just loved it. It looked like you were in one of those photo booths, you know, where you take little snapshots and you get, you know, five or six or whatever, and you just pose, and it just looks so human. I love what you've done in terms of, you know, for celebrities, you know, they're seen by so many people, but only known truly by a few. And you're sharing a side of John with us that we won't know. And it's just, I can feel the love that he had for you and you had for him. Just what you said in the beginning, through your lens. This is John through your lens. And I just think it takes a lot of courage to bring this for people to see. And it's just, and it's just beautiful to take part and to, you know, feel that energy. And on a side note, I visited your website and I saw that you're a designer and your jewelry and furniture and I loved the infinity necklace that you have on your site.
Right.
I think it's beautifully done and I just wondering if you could talk just for, you know, a little bit about your designs and where that inspiration comes from.
Well, a lot of this inspiration, when we were talking about feng shui for, you know, so many years, people are talking about it, and I thought, well, I've been talking about it for all my life, because that was part of my growing up. My mother used to do this with me, and, you know, she says, oh, you can't do this. The feng shui would not be good for you, you know. Of course, she would say to me in Chinese. And it's really creating the energy in around the house. So I would listen to my mom, and then, of course, as I was growing up, I would tell all my friends, and they didn't understand it, of course. And I decided to do something, and, you know, now it was becoming more known. And I said, oh, let me wear something that would reflect what this energy is about. And, of course, when I went out to look for it, nothing out there really matched what I thought would give me that represented the energy that would be coming out. So I decided with my girlfriend, Leslie, and we would go out there, and I said, let's do something different. So we created, you know, they have sayings. So one of them was happiness, one of them is harmony, and another one is enlightenment, and then there's infinity. So each one is a different shape, and it's all stainless steel, and it's hand-finished. My girlfriend sits there, and she grinds it down, and she grinds it to the way that I want it to look. So that each person that buys one of these, even though it might be the same, you know, saying happiness and the same roundness, but that it's just totally different because of the way she has to grind it individually, and the necklace the neck cord that's around it, it's not leather and it's not suede, it's all faux leather, for people who are very concerned with, you know, animals.
Yeah.
They don't want real leather, so I went around looking for something that would fit it, and there's two pieces of jade, which is always, when I was growing up, you know, it's a matter of my mother would give me jade pieces because she said it's protection for my children. So I put two pieces of jade on top of the you know, the stainless steel piece, and it has my name on the front, and it's been engraved in there, and so that's what it is. And what I've done also with the shapes, because there's, like I said, there's four shapes, and three out of the four shapes are also made into little side table, solid stainless steel, and I call the legs that are on there, I call my paperclip legs because it looks like paperclips. And you know, that's all hand, it's all custom made. If you order it, then it's made at that time. You know, it's all custom made for you.
Great.
It's not off
it's
not off the factory line and sitting like in a store. So it's all custom made.
It's all custom made. Wow, and we can find that at Maypang.
Find it on my website.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, maypang.com.
Okay, so if anybody... Now, do you actually go to people's houses and help them get their apartment in?
No, I don't. But I do. I do have people asking me for my help. So I do go, you know. So I can't, because I'd be traveling all over the place. But
you would
no,
be.
I, yeah. No, I, you know, with some of my own friends, you know, they would ask for my
advice. Yeah, sure.
And
but you can definitely buy your jewelry and yeah.
You know, I had it in fact, Lou Christie just if anybody don't know who he is, a famous singer from the 60s who sang that wonderful song Lightning Strikes, you know. And he was just so we've been friends for so many years, and just for my birthday recently, he wrote a song about John and myself, and it's called Hey May. And and you can go on his website and it's on there. You can listen to it.
At LouChristie.com.
Correct.
Oh, my God. And it's Hey May. Wow,
yeah.
I will do that.
Yeah, and, you know, and it was just so sweet. I had no idea he did that. So it's great.
No idea.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? You know, and also, was it something you said about, is it Kurt Cobain? Am I wrong? Were you very involved? Are you,
No, not Kurt Cobain. I think he's much later, and I didn't really know.
Oh, okay. Because I was looking at someone you were, somebody asked you, or maybe that was just like erroneous statement, actually. We never know. But some people that you would like to meet, or, you know, people that you would like to have known or meet that you would like to be part of, their careers in the future.
I guess there would have been a few people I wouldn't mind. I would love to have been in the career of Bill Gates on that level.
That's right, mate.
Or Stephen. I have to say, I'm a you know, Stephen Jobs over at Apple.
That's where I live.
Yes, I'm a big Mac fan. I think I have a graveyard filled of full of Apple computers and the iPhone and everything else I have in this house. And
that's great.
That's one of my things. Yeah, those are
that's one of your things.
Those
well, you know, I would have never dreamed you to say that because actually I had the Tech Museum in San Jose. I had Dr. Frias on, who is the CEO, and so actually the person who started Blog Talk Radio, Alan Levy, suggested that maybe we could have a show, you know, talking about the tech people of the Silicon Valley, because he kind of likened them to Leonardo, you know, how they kind of formed, Rome, you know, Italy, how they made everything. And so I thought, you know, that's a cool idea. That's funny you mentioned. Yeah.
No, I'm a real, my friends know that they call me the gadget queen. Because I have almost every gadget that you could think of, and I'm so into it, you know. And so you name it, it comes out. It's the kitchen. I love to design. I design my own kitchen. I've designed a lot of things, and people had never seen some of the things I had done, and they were quite surprised. And, I have a little knack in about putting my fingers into all the different areas of life.
Interesting.
I do love to design. I do love being a little techie at times, and I do love all my gadgets. So there's hardly a thing that's on those whatever's on television that I haven't tried. So. And then I wish somebody would say to me right now and say, "Listen, I would like for you to try this out and be the reporter to try."
Right.
That's what I do. I love doing all that stuff.
Wow. So Apple could come to you to actually do like a commercial of some of their new product. That's great, you know.
Yeah.
I love doing all that.
That in between the photography and everything else, but definitely all those little things and all the tech stuff, all the and obviously anything you could buy from the space bags that you put your food in to clothing to anything else. I think I've tried everything.
You've tried. Well, that's what I said at the beginning of the program. Other planets are going to be called Maypeng, and we're going to be flying to Maypeng planet. No, you think I'm kidding. I'm a futurist, May.
Well, after all, John and I did see a UFO together.
Yes, right. I read about that. Yes, please do.
Yes. Well, you know, that's a thing that we saw off the balcony of where we lived in New York. And it was not induced by anything. It was just the fact that he stood outside on his balcony at night, and he said, "What are these bright lights?" And then at first he said, "Oh, God, it must be those billboard sign." Then he realized, he said, "But we live in a residential area. What are these billboards?" And then he turned around and he saw this thing flying overhead. And there was no noise. We could hear the street below us. we could, you know, he called out to me and he says, come out here now. Meanwhile, I'm waiting for the pizza man. And I'm sitting there going, what is that thing? And you could see so close. It was so close to us. You could see the outline. You could see the heat waves. You could see the white lights around the rim. You could see the one red light. He actually drew a little drawing of it that I kept over the years because he said, I don't want to forget what this was like. And we watched it for a long time. And you could hear the helicopters because we lived near the river. So you could hear the helicopters. You could see all the stuff. And but we couldn't hear this thing that was directly above our head.
Huh. Well, now, is that when you okay, so something about that, you were going to call somebody, but you said you better
Yeah, we had other people call the locally, like the police station, the Daily News, and a few people had called in. Not the New York Times. Nobody called there, but a few people called the local police station, you know, and they said there'd been some reporting of something unusual, but it wasn't enough to pique anybody. And we weren't about to say, oh, yeah, John Lennon saw a UFO because they would have thought we were nuts. So anyway, so we just left it. But it was a few people. It was documented that, you know, a few people had called that night to say they'd seen something strange in the sky. But, again, it was a Friday night in the summertime. And in New York City, no one's around. They just head out to Long Island, to the Hamptons. And it was really a dead night in the city.
That's weird.
Us and, and I'm screaming, it's a UFO, and no one, not one light, nobody's,
not one,
nothing, and I'm screaming.
Wow, you must have felt, because, you know, I actually heard you, I guess it was about a month and a half, 2 months ago, you were on Coast to Coast.
Right.
Yeah, and, you know, that's what they're all about, are the UFOs and all of that stuff that kind of fits in, you know.
Well, that's interesting. I had no idea.
That's what they're all about. Every night, over and over.
Well, that wasn't perfect.
Oh, you didn't even know?
No, I had no idea.
Oh, man, you're a
delight. I heard that clip on, I think it was on YouTube, and I thought, that's so perfect to share that story.
Which one was it? Oh, you heard the oh, okay.
Coast to Coast, yeah.
Coast, oh, they had a clip of the Coast to Coast. Oh, okay. That's really interesting, because when I heard May, I thought, wow, you know, and the name of the book, The Instamatic Carmen, I thought, why haven't I heard about her before? I should have heard about her before. And, you know, maybe, you know, I'm not really with it. That's why I haven't heard about you. Because, and then when I got into it, I thought, man, this is crazy. I'm in San Fran. Why isn't she here? Why isn't she out, you know, and blah, blah, blah.
Well, you're going to have to do something about it.
I'm going to do something about it, maybe. I would love to. I love to get things going. And in fact, the bookstore tonight, he goes, oh, my God, well, let me look it up. I already got started. But may I tell you what, you know, if you'd like to share anything or come back or whatever, you are so welcome here. You know, I want you to feel
thank you.
Yeah, you're just wonderful. I didn't know. I thought, you know, Christina and I both talked about, we didn't want you to feel like we were going to ask you anything that you didn't want to answer. And we just wanted to really be respectful of the fact that you're sharing these really intimate parts of your life. And I think it takes a lot of courage. And we both admire that.
Well, thank you. I had fun this evening.
Great.
It was a girls' chat.
Yeah.
Joy and I talked earlier today, and we thought, well, we just want to make it feel like we're at a coffee shop, and the listeners are, you know, a couple tables away listening in.
Listening
in.
Whole
thing. I know all that they're just listening. I should just do a radio show for everyone out there.
You know what?
Oh,
actually, you might want to do that because you might be a little bit overwhelmed, but on the other hand, you're going to, you know, people need to know more, and this radio show is here for you. It's actually, you know, you could come on board anytime you wanted. And Alan Levy, if this is the one you were thinking about, Alan Levy, he started the whole thing, May, because his father died, and he wanted to share his feelings about his dad as he was dying. And he came up with Blog Talk Radio, and I thought, my God, this is the radio of the future. You know, Alan's just ahead of his time, and he's a great guy, and he would love to have you.
Sounds great. I mean, it really does. I think, you know, it's a great way. It is the wave of the future, and I think John would have loved it. I'm sure he would have had a show ever on for everyone to, you know, to talk to.
No way.
You know,
John, too, huh?
Yeah. You know, it's,
you're
going to
make Alan's mind.
Oh, you know, it's the, because he was so into all of this stuff, and he really was into the technology of things. He liked the idea that he can do this, you know, and get an instant gratification so quickly, you know, and talk to people, and you know, he would have probably created havoc out on you know, on the air somewhere, you know, or writing emails and you know, he'd be surprised, and he goes, you know, and all of
he would have been. He would have been one of us, and he would have had the John Lennon show. But, you know, I think really and truly this is a galactic communication, because if you think about it, mate, people all over the globe can download this show free of charge, 24/7. You can have a kid out, you know, in Nowheresville that doesn't even have a home that has a cell phone, and they can listen. And it's beyond my imagination what we can do with this. That's why I didn't. Yeah. So
absolutely.
If we can help you in any way, and Christina actually works for Blog Talk, and she'll be more than happy to.
Yeah.
Well, Christina, then you can talk. Then contact me. You know where.
Yep.
I'll help you get started and
get up and running
to help. We'll get you up and running, I know, with our scarves and huddling in the winter.
Oh, that'll be good. We definitely would need that, absolutely, especially on the East Coast right now.
Oh, gosh. Come out here, y'all.
We're due to have a little bit of snow over the weekend.
Oh,
a
little
that.
Bit of snow.
Yep.
Well, you know, along with the dark has to be the light and the dark.
Absolutely, and if anybody's out listening out in Long Island or whatever, and tomorrow afternoon at 2:00, I'm in Westbury with Nancy Andrews, like, you know, because she has her book and I have my book.
I saw that.
Yeah, we're doing it at Borders, and we're doing it also at 5:00 in Syosset. So we're going to both be there in both places.
Wonderful. So you're going to be signing your book. Yeah, I saw that you were coming on with somebody else, and I was going to find out about her, but I never got a chance. What's the name of her book?
A Dose of Rock and Roll.
A Dose of Rock and Roll. Well, that works well together.
Yeah,
yeah,
that was the title of one of Ringo's album, you know, songs, and it was a perfect thing for her since she went with Ringo for 6 years, just prior to Barbara Bach, you know. So it was
good. Perfect. Yeah. So, well, listen, you guys, I really appreciate it, and Christina, thank you, and I'm telling you, mate, I just love you, and I'm looking forward to having you again, and being with you on Blog Talk Radio. And I'm going to give Christina your contact info.
Okay.
And I'm going to go ahead and play Imagine again, because we know that one works.
I love that. I love this song so much. Thank you so much, May. I'll look forward to talking to you soon.
Okay.
Thank
same
you,
here.
Guys. I love
bye.
You. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, where'd it go?